May what I speak, may what you hear, be in the name of the God of love, who creates, redeems, and sustains every single one of us. Amen. Please be seated. A verse from the Gospel, John chapter 20, verse 25. Thomas said, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in Jesus' hands, and put my finger in the mark of the nails, and my hand in his side, I will not believe." Doubting Thomas. That's what we usually call him, isn't it? Doubting Thomas. But the question, of course, is, what's he doubting? What is it that he is doubting? The traditional answer, the usual answer, is, well, he's doubting the resurrection. What do you think? Thomas is doubting the resurrection. Thomas is struggling to believe that Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. He's questioning the reality of the resurrection. I suppose that's true, as far as it goes. But I think there's more to it. I think there's more to it. I think there's something else going on here. Something more profound. Something more fundamental to our faith. And we get to hear what that something else is from Thomas himself. We get to hear just what's perplexing him, what's making him unsure and doubtful. We hear it from his own mouth. Listen again. He says, "Unless I see the mark of the nails and can put my finger in the mark of the nails, then I just won't believe it." Now, those, I think, are some of those words in the Bible that we've heard so often, we forget how shocking they are. Yeah, that often happens. But they are shocking. They're odd. They're strange. Think about it. Thomas's friends have told him they've seen Jesus, their risen Lord. They've seen their dear friend and teacher risen from the dead. And Thomas says, "I won't believe it's him. I won't believe it until I see his wounds, until I can touch his scars." Now, that's a strange thing to say. I won't believe it's Jesus until I see his wounds. The more usual thing, the less odd thing, will be for Thomas to say something like, "I won't believe it's Jesus until I see his face." Because then I know it's him. I'll recognize it. I'll never forget that face. Or maybe, "I won't believe it's Jesus until I look him in the eye. Then I know it's him." Yeah? Or even, "I won't believe it's Jesus until I hear his voice. Because I would know that voice anywhere." But he doesn't say that. He doesn't say any of these things that you might expect. He says this peculiar thing. "I won't believe it's real until I see the wounds, until I see the scars, until I see the marks of suffering and pain." So it seems to me, Thomas wasn't doubting the resurrection as such. Thomas was doubting the nature of that resurrection. Thomas was questioning, what type of resurrection is this? In fact, what type of God is this that we're dealing with? I think Thomas was struggling to redefine, to reimagine who and what God is. Because here are the choices. Is God, on the one hand, simply up there or out there somewhere? Is God so utterly other and different from us that he or she or it has very little to do with our ordinary everyday lives? And so when that kind of otherworldly God raises someone from the dead, you expect them to be raised into some kind of otherworldliness, some kind of spotlessness, some kind of pristine perfection, all traces of humanity, all traces of suffering and vulnerability airbrushed out. Or, on the other hand, and this is the conclusion I think Thomas is being drawn towards, is God the one who is with us, really with us, here with us, genuinely with us, vulnerably with us, fully with us, in the mess and the pain of our lives. And when that kind of God raises Jesus from the dead, nothing is airbrushed out. Nothing. Not his humanity, not his vulnerability, not even his blood-stained scars. Thomas knew, I think, that only the second type of a God is trustworthy. Only the second type of God is real. And so he asks to see the scars. He asks to see the proof that Jesus wasn't just going through the motions on that cross, but really suffered, really died, and so can be really relied on to be with us in our sufferings and our deaths too. Thomas knew only a wounded God is a God worth believing in. Only a suffering God can save us. And I have to tell you this, I think he's right. I think he's right. The more I live and learn, the more I see of life, the more I think Thomas is right. Only a scarred God can save us. Why do I say that? Well, it's like this. This is a beautiful world. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's a wonderful, beautiful world. And sometimes truly wonderful and beautiful things happen. People fall in love, for example. And some of them come here and stand here and pledge their lives to each other. It's beautiful. Or other people I know live lives of extraordinary courage and grace, forgiving their enemies, praying for others. Or it's a beautiful nature outside. Just go outside this time of year. It's absolutely wonderful. And it's a wonderful world, and that other people I know give their lives away for other people. They give their lives away for others. It's amazing. It's a beautiful world. But it's also a wounded world. It's also a wounded world. Who could doubt that? This is a world where loved ones die. And sometimes their families bring them here to be buried. This is a world where cancers can spread. Hearts can fail. Dreams sometimes shatter. In short, this is both a beautiful and a wounded world. And so if there is to be a God to make sense of it all, then somehow that God must embrace it all, must be in it all with us, in the joy and in the sorrow, in the wonder and in the wounds, in the laughter and in the tears. In other words, the risen Jesus can't be some kind of invulnerable superhero who emerges from every tight scrape without a hair on his head out of place. No, the risen Jesus must somehow transform, and yet must somehow still carry the scars of pain and loss. Only a wounded God can make sense of a wounded world. Only a suffering God can save us. Now, one person who understood this from his own experience, who understood what this really means, was the American priest, chaplain at Yale University, William Sloan Coffin. Coffin was widely regarded as one of the best preachers of his generation. And he was also a man who knew great personal tragedy. You see, one night, Coffin's young son, Alex, had been drinking. And on the way home, he lost control of his car, smashed through a barrier, and plunged to his death in a river just outside Manhattan. It was a dreadful tragedy. And after the funeral service, a woman said something to Coffin about Alex's death. This is what she said. She said it was, quote, the will of God. Later, Coffin wrote this. I wanted to grab her and say, lady, that's wrong. God didn't cause this. It wasn't God's will that my son die. None of us knows enough to say that. God doesn't go round the world hurting and killing people when the waters closed over the car that night. The heart of God was the first of all our hearts to break. Only a wounded and heartbroken God can make sense of a wounded and often heartbroken world. Only a scarred and suffering God can save us. In a few minutes, we'll do again what Christians have been doing for 2,000 years now. We'll take some ordinary things, a little bread and a little wine, and we'll break the bread, and we'll pour the wine, and then we'll share them. And we'll do it to remember. We'll do it to remember how Jesus was broken, like the bread. How Jesus had his body broken on the cross to show us how far love will go to save us. And we'll do it to remind ourselves. We'll do it to remind ourselves how Jesus was poured out, just like the wine. How Jesus poured out his life in love for his friends and for us. And then we'll share the broken bread and the wine poured out to remind ourselves that the broken and risen Jesus is still with us, still sharing his life with us, still sharing God's love with us. And that is what the doubting Thomas needed to see and experience for himself. And I suspect it's what many of us need in our struggles too. Not a fancy formula, not a slick theory, not a cliched answer taken out of our pocket. Just Jesus. Just Jesus sharing his life with us. Just Jesus sharing God's love with us. And just Jesus promising that nothing, nothing, nothing will ever separate us from that life and love. Amen.